Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, Sign Guy and QT with you here on Labor Day weekend Sunday. Really quick, a couple of show notes if you're looking for some wrestling today. IWF is running today in Anderson, Indiana, and tomorrow night in Paragon, Indiana. And tonight, as usual, in North Portland, Oregon, you can catch NWA Blue Collar happening at the North Portland Eagles. Now, today we are talking about Don Owen era Portland wrestling, something near and dear to us up here in the Pacific Northwest. Don Owen ran a tremendous territory for many, many decades. It is very fondly remembered up here by all those who were lucky enough to take part in it and to witness it. We have with us a couple of people right now that wrestled for Don Owen. I would like to welcome to the show Mickey Doyle and Jerry Oates. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much for taking time today to be on and talk some Portland wrestling with us.
Well, I feel honored to be able to do this.
Yeah, and I'm just flattered you guys remembered me and put me on your show. Thank you.
Our pleasure to have you, gentlemen. Just as a point of reference, I'll start with Mr. Doyle on this, but same question to both of you to start. Can you tell us what initially brought you to the Portland territory?
Jerry, I'll go, all right? What actually brought me there was I was working down in Mobile for Lee Fields, and I'm going to just tell you how it was. They screwed me on a payoff. I got upset, so I... Bobby Shane, you guys, are we there? Am I still here?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Just trying to get one more guest on real quick.
Okay. So I just needed somewhere to go, and Bobby Shane got me booked in Portland in 1973.
So you came over from the Gulf Coast, correct?
Correct, yeah, I did. Well, I was doing real good. I was in a tag team with a guy named Mike Boyette, but they just screwed us on a payoff. He went to L.A. and I went to Oregon.
All right, and Mr. Oates, can you tell us what brought you into Portland?
I was wrestling Harley Race in New Orleans on a Thursday night, and we're getting instructions. He looks at me and he says, "Don Owens wants you in Portland." I said, "What?" I was wrestling for Watson, Louisiana and Oklahoma. I said, "Don Owens?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "We'll call him tomorrow." So I never, you know, I'd always heard about Portland and what, you know, what a good territory it was. And I was doing well out there for Watson, but I'd been there a year. And of course, everybody knows about the trips there. So we called him, and that's how I wound up out there. I left from Watson and went out there.
Jerry, that would have been in like 78, wasn't it? 77, 78 for you?
78, yeah.
Yeah. What a difference in trips, eh? On the road, what a difference. Holy Toledo. Watts to Portland.
Yeah. And, you know, I went to a lot of different territories, but my wife and I still talk about when we lived out there. That was probably the most enjoyable territory, one of the most. It was right at the top of all the territories I went to. The talent was unbelievable.
How did you do with Elton? How did you get along with Elton Owens?
Yes, but I can tell you stories about
Elton. Oh, yeah, I'm not going there either because he... he was a numbnut. Truthfully, he was a numbnut. But anyway, that's just my opinion.
But I pulled so many ribs on him when I got there. Jesse Ventura was there. I knew Jesse from when Jesse started in Kansas City, when my brother Ted and I were in Kansas City. And so what I did, my wife and I left Louisiana. We went back to my hometown here in Georgia, shipped our stuff out to Jesse and his wife, and we flew out there. And when I got there, we stayed with them for about 5 days, and I bought me a new car, and the rest was history. But the talent was unbelievable. I mean, it was a very unusual territory. It wasn't a huge territory, but, you know, you could be on the main event for 2 weeks, and the next week you'd be on second match. You know, everybody got
a chance. I was there with you. I was there 78 with you for a while, then I went over to Hawaii. But I remember Snuka, and I think Bull Ramos was in there, right? And,
Bull Ramos came in. The Sheik come in. Waskowski was there.
Yep, Waskowski, right. Mike George. Mike George was there.
Mike George came in. Buddy Rose was there.
Buddy Rose.
The talent was there. Of course, Jimmy was there, Snuka.
Had
to deal with that. You know, dealing with
Was Al Madrill
like
there then?
No.
I can't remember.
No.
He wasn't? Okay. All right. Yeah, that was a lot of talent.
And Don Owens was a unique guy to work for. You know, easygoing, funny.
Yep.
I enjoyed working for him. Elton, didn't have too much of a problem with him. Just Johnny Eagles and I. You knew Johnny,
Johnny,
right?
Johnny Eagles.
Oh.
Yeah, I worked with Johnny there, yeah.
And Ricky Hunter was there, and Dale Lewis was there.
Yeah. Okay, remember when Elton, like we worked Eugene for Elton in Salem, and he'd do these five-minute shoots before the match, and he'd pay whoever's in it X amount of dollars. So we always worked the shoots. Remember that? Ricky Hunter would do, I remember him and the Sheik did it one time. They went for real, but most of the time the guys would work it, and Elton was like a kid in the candy store. He thought it was for real. You know, everybody worked them.
Well, you know, you have it.
But you remember that.
You know how Hunter and the Sheik got into it, don't you?
No, but we were there that night in Salem, right? What happened? I don't remember.
All right. When I had the little trophy, right? So the Sheik comes in. So Elton comes to me and Eugene said, "Hey, kid, you're going to put up the title tonight."
That's him.
I said, sure, Elton, whatever you want. And so I'm working with the Sheik, you know.
He's the boss.
And the Sheik, you know the Sheik, he's an idiot. So he's going to try to impress Elton, right? So the referee comes over. I said, you tell that nut, that idiot, this shoot is a work. Don't get carried away, right? So
yeah,
we're getting
really
punches, and it's his first night in Eugene. So I'm telling that idiot. I met him way back in St. Louis when he first got here. O'Connor loved him. Pat O'Connor.
Back in the day.
Him.
Yeah.
So I tell him, look, Sheik. I said, this just take it easy. Just take it easy. Oh no. We go to look up. He shoots behind me. He gives me a belly-to-back suplex and knocked me out.
Right on your neck, right?
Yes. So I come around and blah, 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 blah. Elton coming out. Kid, you lost the trophy tonight. He got the best of you. Said, yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. So Johnny Eagles was there and Jesse was there. So the following – that was on a Friday night. The following Wednesday, we were in Salem. We're wrestling on the stage. So, Elton comes in. Well, we got a new champ, guys. And he said, Ricky Hunter, you're on with the Sheik, and you can go for the title. So, Johnny Eagle starts stirring this thing up, man. He starts stirring it up. And Johnny already knew about it. Johnny and Ricky and I were very, very close. And so, Ricky, I never knew how salty he was until that night. So
he could go. Ricky.
Oh,
yeah.
So Johnny starts stirring the pot. And he's over there telling shit. He said, you know, you have your hands full, you know, with that English accent. Are you going to have your hands full? And blah, 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 blah. He said, I'm not worried. So Hunter looks over there at him. He said, I'm going to take those 7 gold medals and stick them up your you-know-what. Stick them up your you-know-what. So this is getting out of hand now. It's getting out of hand. I mean, it's getting out of hand. So anyhow, he looked at him and he said, you hurt my friend. And there it went. So when they go out there and everybody's up on the stage watching, Hunter hooked up when he went behind him, suplexed him, put a mat burn right down the middle of his head. When the shoot got up, Ricky was standing up all over him, front face locking, blah, blah. Elton's hollering, you're killing my town, you're killing my town. In your shoe.
This is what you wanted, fool.
That's what you got.
But Ricky was salty. He could go. I mean, he could get on the mat and go. He was a tough. Is he still alive, Ricky Hunter?
Yeah, he was in Tampa.
Oh.
The last, I'm sure
good.
You know, his wife passed away.
No, I didn't even know that. No.
But if you have some Oregon stories, I got them. So after all that, Johnny, he was mad because of the whole situation. Blah 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 blah. So
he was the instigator.
He was. Let me tell you something about Johnny. I love Johnny Eagles as much as I did anybody in the business. When he ribbed you, or if you ever did something to him. Or like me, I was a friend of his.
Yeah.
Well, the sheep, Johnny and I went to, what was that town right outside of Portland up into Washington? It was on a Sunday. It was
Vancouver? Vancouver, Washington?
No. I can't
Longview?
Remember the town. Maybe it was.
Longview, maybe, yeah. Yeah, Longview.
So,
that was a Sunday town spot show, yeah.
So we... Johnny and I, it's a dreary day, raining, you know. And so he says, I got to pull in this curb market here. I said, what you got to get? He says, well, come on in, I got to get some. He buys a jar of honey.
Yeah.
So I don't think nothing about it. So the match is going on, sheets in the ring, Johnny disappears, and he don't say nothing. The next night, the sheet comes in the dressing room, raising, saying, hollering and screaming, my commodity matches last night, and this honey all in my velour seats, all in my windshield wipers. I have to drive the car standing up going home. I have to take my babies to school. They should be in honey. I'm saying, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So then we go to Yakima, Washington on Monday. You know where we used to park out there at the station? So Johnny and I are riding together. Bull Ramus is taking the sheik, right? So,
well, remember the bull had that van and the sheik would drive it, and they play poker in the back. Remember, he'd make the sheik drive it.
Yeah, there you go. So they didn't drive fast, and I always drove pretty fast. So we were way ahead of them coming out of Yakima, right? So Eagles, we get out there close to that where everybody parked, and he says, "You happen to have a tire iron in the car in the trunk, lug wrench, right?" I said,
"Johnny,
yeah, I got one." Well, he says, pull in over here. So he pulled in, you open the trunk. Got tire iron out, as he called it. He knocked all 4 of his headlights out. Got back in the car, he said, carry on.
Wow.
And
he could go, too, though. Eagles could go. He was a tough guy.
He could go.
You know who got cute with, one time Bill White got cute with him, and he didn't know Johnny Eagles, and Johnny goes, oh, okay, mate, you know, we can get on the mat and go, and... You know, that Bill shouldn't have said nothing, you know. He just kind of tied him in figure eights. But, yeah, I like Johnny. He was a good guy.
Hey,
you know, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say about Don Owens, one thing about Don Owens, if the house was good, you know, everybody got a fair payoff as opposed to some promoters who would screw you. But he was pretty fair, Don. You know, he was pretty fair.
No,
I liked that about him.
For what we drew, he was one of the best payoff men that I'd worked for. I made money out there.
Shires was good, too. Yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I missed, I always wanted to work for him,
yeah.
But I never did.
Plus for the who Shires?
Yes.
He paid off. I mean, on the Cow Palace, you worked the opener, you'd make between 4 and 5. It was great. You know, that was great. He paid off fair. He was kind of, you know, he was like a little general, kind of a numbnut sometimes, but it was all right because he paid, which was good. You had to work, though. I mean, you had to be a worker to work for him, you know. He didn't,
oh,
you know, anybody couldn't
I
work
wanted,
for him.
I always wanted to go there, but I don't know when did he close?
Oh, gosh. When did he close? It's a good question. I don't know. I think Vince McMahon kind of put the, you know, the kibosh to everybody around the mid-'80s
yeah.
going into the later 80s, so maybe it was then. I don't know.
But Don
was a great,
he
was fair.
He told
I got to, can I tell an Elton story? Can I tell
sure.
one of my Elton stories? We was doing a spot
sure.
show. I first went in there in 73, and this was right around that time. So one thing about the Owens, it was cash every night, which was great. I liked that. But I go in the dress room, and Owen goes, I gotta give you an extra 20. I like what you did, but don't tell anybody. So
right,
I go out of the
right.
dressroom. Sandy Barr's waiting next to him. Sandy, he gave me an extra 25. Guys, he gave me an extra 25. So I just left that, and Sandy goes, fuck that. Oh, never mind. Sorry. Sandy goes, I'll get my money. I'm going in next. I'll get my money. But yeah, Elton.
So after that, Don had Elton to come up and take care of Portland TV, right? So we're in
yeah.
the dressing room. We're in the dressing room. I'm going to be doing the ring announcement that night. I said, good, Elton, good, good. I mean, Don, Elton, good, good, good. So he hangs his coat up in there. I take a blade out of my bag. Johnny
yeah.
and Jesse are going nuts. So right before
yeah.
you do your elbow on a coat, I put a long slit in both arms.
Yeah.
So he puts his coat on. He goes out there to do the ring announcing, grabs the microphone, pulls it up, and pulls the card up in his other hand to make the announcement. So both elbows are sticking out. I thought we were going to die. We should have done that. You know,
that's a great rib.
So, you know, and then Don Owens, when I got there, you know, he says, kid, I hope you're not coming out here to Homestead. He said, they come up out of here, out of the east, and want to stay out here forever. I said, well, I won't be Homestead. And I said, I'll stay as long as you want me to stay. But, I, you know, a lot of guys did. They just plopped down out there, you know.
Yeah,
but
they did. I mean, the trips
were fun territory. It was fun, you know. And then I had to deal with Dutch,
yeah.
you know. What was Dutch? Any of you guys on here know actually what he had out there? Just some of Washington or what?
I think that he had – I remember working in Seattle, and he had that. He was calling the shots, but that was in the late 70s. I don't know what he had in the early 70s. He probably had something, but he had his head so far up Elton's rear end, it was unbelievable, you know? I mean, he didn't even deny it, you know? And Elton –
Well,
you know, Elton's son was gay, all right? So Dutch said, okay, this is my spot. I'll be his son. And, boy, he did it. You know that?
Yeah,
he did it.
All right, well, gentlemen, real
worker.
Quickly, I have one more guest on, I believe. We have Mr. Pritchard with us.
Guys, how are you?
Cowboy Tom.
You know, that'd be Dr. Tom these days, man. I'm so sorry I had my ringer off, and I totally forgot until I came right out and found my phone. Yeah. How are you guys?
Dr. Tom, this is Mickey. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Hey, Mickey, how are you?
Everything's cool. We're having fun here. Jerry and me having a really good time, just reminiscing.
Outstanding. Reminiscing about Don?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I couldn't hear you guys because we're both talking, I think, all three at the same time.
Well, I'll tell you another. Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Jerry, go ahead. You got better story. I was just gonna ask Tom how he got along with Elton.
Oh, you know what, man? It's funny you should even bring up Elton's name because
we've been real honest here. Everything's been honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a friend of mine who's writing a book, trying to write a book with me, and we were talking about Elton and Don and Barry and everybody the other day. I got along with Elton great, and as a matter of fact, he and Betty even brought had Hack Sawyer and myself come over to his house, and we fished in a stock pond. And
Everybody did that. I'm sorry, everybody did that.
Exactly. So he was cool, but I was also telling the story that if you would have told me this story, I would have said, yeah, sure, right, because that just sounds like something everybody makes up. But I actually saw it with my own four eyes. Elton used to smoke those cigars, and he would put it down. I don't understand why he would put it down on the bench and then leave and go to the dresser or the box office. But I saw this one night, can't remember the town, but Elton puffing away on a cigar, and then he set it on the bench and went to the box office, and Matt Bourne picked up the cigar, pulled his tights down, and put it in his ass and walked around the dressing room.
That's a Donnie Fargo trick. Donnie Fargo does that.
Matt Bourne did that too. And literally for about a minute, Matt walked around the dressing room. And Elton came back, literally just didn't miss a beat, put the cigar back in his mouth, lit it up, and Matt says, I don't know how you smoke those things, Elton, it tastes like shit. And Elton had never put it over.
He says it's a fine cigar,
Yes, it was a fine cigar, man. It was a fine place to work, too. It really was.
So, Doc, you're out on the road still. You're doing shows, right?
On occasion, yeah. I'm doing more camps. Like, this summer has been pretty busy. I've done a lot of camps. I did it in Texas. Did a couple in L.A. and Vegas for Sin Bodhi's Freak Show Wrestling. And
wow.
Old school wrestling in Odessa,
good.
Texas, Charlotte.
Good for you, buddy.
I just came back from Harley Race's camp in Missouri. So it's been really kind of fortunate and lucky to do that. Yeah, it's been real cool.
Yeah, that's great. That's helping money-wise, you know. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. But, hey, Mickey, you lived at the Bomber, right?
I sure did, the old Bomber, yeah.
What number were you in? What cell block were you in? Huh?
Ed Wiskoski lived right next to me, and Mike George lived right across that road there, you know, that island in the middle of it. And
right.
I don't remember
my
number. If you went in there and you made it right into the driveway, the second driveway, I was on that side, the left side.
Okay.
You know,
well,
that airplane, the Bomber?
Yes.
What were you?
I was in number two. I just remember that because it was Jerry Gray had cell block one. I had cell block
Jerry
two.
Gray.
Wow. Yes.
You know, that was the Bomber was, I mean, for a single guy, I mean, they had a shower, had a bedroom, had you could cook there. I mean, it was pretty cool. It had a TV. It wasn't bad, really, you know?
No, it was furnished. You had they gave you dishes. You had a couch, a table, and all that stuff. Yeah, no, it was pretty cool. It was great.
You were in the 80s there, right? Like the early 80s, or were you late 70s too?
No, I was in the mid 80s. I think it was 1985 when I got there. And
okay.
Yeah. And Kurt Hennig was still there. Scott McGee was there. Buddy Rose, Ed Wiskowski obviously was still there. So it was CV Alpha, CV Alpha, whatever. Cliff Oliver and those guys, the Assassin, Dave Shearer. I mean, yeah.
And
I was
Mike Miller, right?
Me, Mike Miller was still there, yeah.
Is, do you think Ed Wiskoski still lives in Oregon, or whatever happened to him?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me, because Oregon's
I believe the last report I heard was Ed Wiskoski actually moved to Arizona.
Ah,
that's what I heard.
Well, I was there when... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Ed, I remember he had a girlfriend whose mom owned a racetrack in Portland, so I wonder if he ended up with her, because if he did, then he, you know, came into some money, I'm sure. So I just wondered, because, I mean, he pretty much did wrestling for a lot of years, so you know what I'm saying? Maybe he made enough money or something. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Just be curious.
Well, I think if you saved your money in Oregon, then you could pretty much do whatever you wanted to. And Ed would seem like a pretty smart guy. I always liked Ed.
Yeah.
I got along great with him.
I did too.
Good guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a great place. Yeah, Portland was cool. Like we were saying, Don paid off there and short trips, basically, and a lot of talent there, good mass.
Oregon. Here's what it seemed like to me, that the Pacific Northwest was where they sent all the green guys for every occupation, like the TV announcers, newscasters, and all that stuff. Everybody kind of went up to the Northwest, where it seemed like you're almost cut off from the rest of the world. And, you know, that was a place to learn and get experience and make your mistakes, and then kind of get greeted back into civilization eventually. So, but I had a blast up there. The summer I was there was one of the best summers they've had in years. And went out on the lake a few times and really enjoyed it. And you're right, man. It was short trips. Gorgeous part of the country, I think.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, it was back then, you know, you just had to show up in the dressing room at least an hour before showtime. Now, the guys are there all day. You have to be there, you know, a few hours before showtime. You know, we got to do what we got to do and what we wanted to do, man. It was a nice, nice place. Nice time.
When you were there, was Sam LaPrinze, remember Sam LaPrinze's gym? Jerry, you worked at Sam LaPrinze's gym, right?
Oh, LaPrinze, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had a LaPrinze t-shirt.
Yeah, that was a great gym. He was a great guy because he gave all the wrestlers a deal, you know, whatever it was. But he was a good guy, and what a terrific gym. That was neat.
It was great.
I remember when I first went in there in 73, the high school was there, and I go in there at sometimes late, was Salem or something where you didn't have to leave too late, and Matt Bourne was like in 12th grade, and he'd always come in there and he'd just sit there looking at me and go, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to do this. Boy, he did it, didn't he?
He did. Wow, he sure did. Yeah.
Well, his dad was there, Tony Bourne, I mean,
Right. There was a lot of history up there, and a lot of, like I said, a lot of the guys went up there to learn and hone their craft. Were you there when Gino Hernandez came up to Portland?
Who was it? Who?
Eugenio Hernandez. Gino.
I never met him. I never knew him. Yeah.
Okay.
Gino Gino arrived just as I was leaving.
I see. Yeah. Well, he was. He went up there in what, late 70s, I guess.
78.
78. Okay. Well, then he.
I was leaving, too. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. No, man. But, I mean, it was like that's where everybody kind of went to start out. And or finish up or just kind of go for a cool place to be. I remember, I just got the Grappler's book, too, which is kind of interesting. And he's talking about wanting to go to Portland early on and he couldn't get in because that's where everybody wanted to go. It was kind of like, Pensacola and the Alabama territories in the day when you could go to those places and just chill out, no pressure, do whatever you wanted to do during the day, whether it was work out or work in, or do whatever you wanted to do, and no problems, man, as long as you went out and had a good match And how could you not have a good match up there? Because there always was good talent. There always was a great crowd, great wrestling fans. And, man, that was a great place to be. It really, really was.
You know another guy we've overlooked who was a tough little guy and an old-timer? Haru Sasaki. Do you remember him? Meet him, Haru Sasaki? Haru Sasaki. He was a little Chinaman. He was an old timer, but I was there in 73, and he was there then, and he had homesteaded, but he was a tough little guy because he would work for Shires, and all the wild Samoans and all the cow palace throwing things and riot police, and Sasaki would go right in the crowd. He was managing, he was managing the original Samoans, the original, not the guys that, you know, now these were Reno Tuafuli and a guy out of Memphis, and I can't remember his name, but they were the real Samoans.
Yeah.
Rocky would manage them. And he was a tough little guy, but he homesteaded in Oregon, and I think he died there. Did you know Shag Thomas? Do you remember Shag Thomas?
I remember hearing about Shag Thomas, but I never met him.
Yeah, he passed away, I think, maybe in the late 70s. It was a great place, bottom line. Really great place. There was no taxes, no city taxes or something. There was no taxes on something, I remember.
Oh, there was no taxes going to that rock and roll bar downtown either. We didn't get taxed. We just went down.
Speaking of, you said you can work out or work in. Do you remember some chick named Portland Pam? Does that ring any bell?
It does. Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. Just wondering. Yeah. All right.
Yes, of course. But that's in the past.
Work in, work out, whatever.
Huh?
Kayfabe. Yeah, kayfabe.
Yeah,
kayfabe's
of course.
Kayfabe's dead, ain't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
I was told
course.
That.
Yeah.
By some kids, yeah. So. Who's it? Jerry?
Well, no.
Come on, Jerry. You got the best stories
yeah.
of everybody.
All right. I'll give you another Dutch savage story. we can go to Salem. You know, Salem, you know, you don't make no money in Salem, right? So we go there and we go there. So I told Waskowski, I said, look, I said, let's go talk to Don. I said, this is a joke, man. It's close, but I want to make some money, you know. He said, let's go talk to him. So we go talk to him.
Right.
I told him, I said, Elton, I said, I got something I want to throw at you. Hey, yeah, what is it, kid? I said, look, I said, Waskowski and I, we had some great matches when we were in Missouri, and I said, we worked good together. I said, why don't you let us do like a 6-week program? I said, I promise you it'll get over and we'll get the houses up. Yeah, we'll start in a couple of weeks. So first week, $35. Second week, $65. Third week, we make $98. So it goes from 35 to 98 in 3 weeks. Like so, we was going to turn that into a little later tag matches, and I mean we had good matches. So on the third week, the houses it was the best house I've seen there. Dutch is there. He sees the house. He tells Elton he wants to come back next week with Waskowski. In that coal miner glove match he has or something they've seen
yeah.
for, what, 30 years? House dropped
right
back down.
Yeah, right, 82 years, I think. Yeah.
The next week,
that's how it worked with him.
Down. You know, and
how it worked, buddy.
It was, then some stuff happened to him from Johnny Eagles.
Johnny,
did you
got him? Payback?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure Johnny did it. I know he did it, but we're wrestling
yeah.
in Portland on Saturday night doing TV, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Dutch had this fancy van, you know, Muriel on it, and it was custom in the side and blah, 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 blah. So matches are going on. It's getting close to being in. So Dutch said he's going to put his stuff in the van, come back in. He come back in raising sand. Somebody broke him up. Stole my TV, CD player, track, whatever it was at the time. I thought
yeah.
I was going to lose my mind in that dressing because I knew what happened. So we're in Portland on the big show. What was that, Tuesday nights? They call
yep,
it Portland.
Portland.
Yeah, Tuesday
night show or something. All right,
yeah.
the main event
yeah.
is me and Jesse against Waskowski and Rose. It's packed. It's full. Packed.
That's a good match. That's a good match. Except for Jesse. It's a good match except for Jesse,
yeah. Well, there for a while, Jesse didn't know where he was in there, you know. But anyhow, that's another story. But anyhow, the match was, you know, that was going to be the match. It was a tag match. We'd take the belts from them. So Smith is supposed to be there. He was on like third. Dutch is on the card. Well, the word we
yeah.
got is that, did y'all ever hear this story?
I never heard.
Well, the story was that the whatever night, what the night was Seattle? Monday?
No, I think Seattle might have been a Wednesday.
Was it? Okay.
I think Seattle was a Wednesday, yeah.
Okay. Well, Snooker was in Seattle on that given night. He missed the next two nights. Didn't show up. Just didn't show up.
Mm.
Dutch, Jimmy didn't show up?
No.
Oh, Dutch.
Dutch calls Jimmy's wife and told him that he's missed two shows in a row and that he got a girlfriend in Seattle.
I believe that.
No, wait, man. You don't know the end of the story to this thing. So we get to the matches, and everybody, where's Snooker? So I said, yeah, you know, Dutch called his wife. And Jesse says, that PGM's going to come in here and hurt somebody. I said, well, I hadn't done anything to him. We'll see what happens. So he was on second or third match. So right before bell time, Jimmy walks in. You know how Jimmy always was, hey, brother. He don't say a word to anybody. He don't say nothing to nobody. I mean, nothing to nobody. He gets dressed. His match. He goes out. Excuse me. He comes back in the dressing room. That dressing room door flew open. Bang. Dutch is sitting there putting his stuff on. He walks right up to him. Get up, brother. Get up. I know what you did. He said, I'm going to kill you right here in this dressing room. And he was standing over him with his fist and his arms straight down, shaking. But every vein in his body was going to come to the surface of his skin. That hair was shaking. He begged him to get up. He begged him. I'll get you later, brother. He was cussing him like a dog, right? So nothing happened. 3 weeks later, Johnny Eagles, Ricky Hunter, me and Jesse. I got my wife, Ricky. This is going to be at Ricky's house. Y'all ever go to Ricky's house?
No.
Ricky Hunter's house?
No.
It was Ricky's wife and Ricky, Johnny and his wife, me and my wife, and Jesse invited Dutch and his wife. We're going to throw a party for Dutch. Well, it was on a Sunday night. We all have this nice dinner. It was unbelievable. It was just elegant, blah, blah, blah. And Johnny starts in about, we're throwing this for you, Dutch. You know, you've done so much for the boys all these years. You've taken care of the boys when they're in your towns, and they did this, and put him over and praised him. And Dutch slides back in his chair, and he's crying. I've done all I could. I've tried to help everybody to come through here, and that goes on and on. So Johnny says, it's time for dessert. Eagles went to a cake made, and it was white icing like a birthday cake, and yellow writing and yellow icing on it said, thanks, Dutch, for everything. You know what was in the middle of that cake? A yellow chicken.
Oh.
You hear me? Eagles brought that damn cake out there. I thought I was going to lose my mind. I had to get up. The Dutch don't get it. Johnny convinced him with the cake. Got this yellow chicken. Doesn't take it. I'm telling you. He never got it.
The best. Hey, listen, as long as we're Barry and Savage, I got one, all right? This would have been like late 73, and Lonnie Main was working for Shires, but he came down to see his wife because she lived in Portland for a couple weeks. So he's working every night. So his last night, him and Dutch tag team against, I think it was Manny Cruz and Al Madrill, and Dutch did a big major juice job, so match is over. Dutch is sitting on a bench. Lonnie comes up to him, and just like Jimmy, says, get up. And Dutch goes, what's wrong, Lonnie? He goes, I know you were bad-mouthing my wife, telling that she's cocking around when I'm on the road and this, that, and the other. And Dutch goes, oh, same thing that you told to Jimmy. But Lonnie started paintbrush, and we're all watching. The whole Ray Glenn, I remember Ray Glenn. He was from England. He was there, and all Manny and everybody. And he, boom, boom, back and forth. He hit him like 10 times, 5 you know, once on each cheek with his back of his hand.
Smacking him around?
He's not punching him, you know, slapping him.
Smacking him around, right?
Oh. Yeah, but Dutch didn't get up. He was sitting there, and Lion just going boom, boom, boom about 10 times. And then Dutch has got blood. You know, he did a major juice jab. He takes his bag. He's covered in blood, and he runs out of the dressing room crying. I swear to God. I mean, talk about being humiliated in life. And Lonnie just took a shower and said, I'll see you boys next time in town, because he was going back to first. I guess Dutch was saying that his wife was cocking around, when he, you know, for no reason saying that. Even if it is true, and it probably wasn't, it's the same thing as he calling Jimmy's wife and saying that, you know? Just, why?
I don't know why he did stuff like that. I got no idea why he did
I don't know. I remember one time him and me and Rip were making a trip somewhere, and he wanted to stop by the side of the road and shoot some cows and carve them up. And I'm thinking, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? You know, I'm sorry for swearing if we're on the air. But, you know, you just wonder what the guy was a great worker, but he was not a great person. He just wasn't.
He didn't have a, not many people cared for him. He tried to be, you know, I don't know, you know, he wasn't like
Ronaldo. I don't either.
I don't know what he was, you know.
How did you get on Tom Ernesto there? How did that get thrown in there?
Because Tom was the coolest guy I had ever been around in the business. The most.
I got a lot good when he was.
I love working
for
Tom.
He was booking L.A., and that's Dr. Tom's buddy, Tom Ernesto.
Okay, because I have to agree that Tom was one of the coolest guys, as in smooth-talking kind of guy.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, I was just a young guy in L.A., and some guy took me to the Rocky Horror Picture Show and pretty much corrupted me from then on. But Tom, that would be Mickey Doyle. Tom talked to Mickey. Were you there the time I got the hard way from Tom Jr.?
I was there for a lot of our. We were together a lot of times. I can't remember truthfully.
Okay.
I think I do, and it really bled. The red blood real.
No. It was a real hard way. But here's how Tom presented it to us. You know, Tom Jr. and myself really never worked. In fact, we never worked. But they had to have had a new rule in L.A. where you couldn't talk about the matches unless you had a match in the ring. So you couldn't promote the matches, just talking about it on TV. I don't know what the rule was or how it even came about. But,
I don't remember that. But
well, I do, because that's the way they explained it to us. And you remember the big clock that was on the wall in the Olympic that would count down, right?
I sure do. Riverside,
okay.
Whatever it was.
Yes. So the way Senior explained it to us was we were going to have this match, Tom Jr. and myself, and well, 15 minutes to a draw, but about a minute left, Tom's going to punch me for real in the eye and give me a black eye. He says, are you okay with that, son? And I'm probably going to say, no. Well, I said, of course. But they had this big... Yeah, exactly. You know, I've been in the business, 6 months? Sure. So they had everybody around the ring. Yeah, everybody around the ring like a lumberjack match. And Junior and I worked the match, and about 14 minutes in, we look at the clock, and Tom Jr. says, are you ready? I said, sure. So he gives me this short punch, gashes me open, wide open, and blood just starts flowing. It's a good-looking punch, and it's a good-looking eye.
Yeah.
But Tom... you know, this was before we did interviews and before the show that night. And it was going to be shown on Sunday afternoon and say it was happening live. Well, we still had
Channel
to take interviews.
Channel 34.
Whatever channel it was, I just remember, you know, we did it before we did any taping. We taped this match and everybody's around the ring. And they go, wow, it's a great match between Cowboy Tom and the Assassin. You know, they're settling their feud, which, you know, this is the first time we ever worked. Yeah, well... You know, I busted my eye open and Al McDriddle's there saying, man, you should go to the hospital, get it stitched up. I didn't think anything about it, but I went and asked Tom. He goes, well, can you just hang around for these tapings we had to do? And I said, sure. So we just put a little butterfly on it, and then I went to the hospital that night. But the commission paid for all that stuff back then. But Tom was a smooth talker. I like Tom Resto as a smooth talker, but as I got around the business a little bit more, I think some of the guys would call that a liar. I just thought it was a smooth talker. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I
had a lot of
for that.
Sure. But Tom was great, man. Tom, I enjoyed working with him. He would go over the match move for move, which that's how I thought you did it back then, because those are the bookers I dealt with. Chavo was booking when I first came in L.A., but then Tom Sr. came in after Chavo and just laid out everything from A to C, which I had a hard time remembering this stuff. But
that's how they do it now. Those kids.
Oh. That's how they do it on TV now, yeah. Sure is. It's still crazy, in my opinion. But that's just
opinion. You know who Tom Renesto created, though? He created the infamous Piel Blanco. That's who he created, the famous him. Piel Blanco was created by Tom Renesto.
Oh, that is a good thing, man. He is a... and I thought Tom did know his stuff. At least he made me believe it. But,
he was a young kid. Whatever happened to Tim Paul?
Tom was a great booker.
He was.
I was going here in Georgia for years. He was unbelievable.
He was the assassin, right? He was giving Jody. Yeah.
Hamilton.
We're getting back to Portland. Is Sandy Barr still alive?
No, Sandy died too.
Did
he really?
I heard that too. Yeah. He was a good guy. I like Sandy Barr.
I really did.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked him too. Nice man.
He couldn't have been that old.
Well,
I think he had a heart attack. I think he might have had a heart attack, I heard, some years ago.
Yeah, that was maybe 10 years ago, I think he did.
Is that right? My God.
He produced a couple of, kids that were talented workers too. I mean, really.
Yeah, it's just not like, I don't think you can ever duplicate that again, duplicate the territory and duplicate that style, because the genie has been let out of the bottle and everybody has to. All those guys like Sandy and Luke Brown and Don and Elton and even Don's son, Barry, came from that mold of old school wrestling that it's kind of like Tennessee and maybe parts of Georgia, I'm not sure, where people always wanted to believe and still want to believe, and that's in order for
believe
them to
it's
believe
real, right.
Yeah, in order for them to want to believe, the boys have to believe it, and today I think the guys that are being raised up on WWE all have this preconceived notion that this is what it is. It's just always been a performance. And it hasn't always been a performance. And when you went to places like Portland and Eugene and Salem, those were people who wanted to go see wrestling. And they wanted to see the guys wrestle. And they wanted to see the guys take it serious. And they know it was show business to an extent. But I think they also know that when you saw guys like Piper get in the ring against Buddy Rose and have classic matches, or Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper, and they would get out there and they'd wrestle hard, and the people would cheer hard, and they didn't insult their intelligence. And unfortunately, there's not anybody around. Not anybody around these days. I think they can pull that off and either run a territory or even get in the ring. So.
Well, that was well said, Doctor. That was really well said. Nice job there. That summed up a lot of things. That was good. Yeah. Dead air, guys, dead air.
Nice dead air. Somebody told me, says, whatever you do, just keep it moving. So I said, man. Hey, what about real quick, in Eugene, was the dressing room just always a closet? Remember.
Yeah, God, it was. Yeah. It was at the fairgrounds, and it was actually like a closet. You're right.
It was
bad.
It was pretty.
Eugene.
I can tell you another Matt Bourne story real quick, and this is blog talk, so language isn't necessarily an issue, is it?
No, you're good.
Okay. All right. Well, in the babyface locker room side, there was a door that led to the women's bathroom. And I mean, it's right there, right? Barricade or whatever. He just opened the door, and there was a woman's bathroom. Well, here's another story. If I didn't see it, didn't hear it, I'd say, oh, you're lying. Well, one night, Matt had a wonderful girl come through that door.
Portland Pam, yeah.
Oh, no, not Portland Pam. Come on. But I'm not sure. It was just a wonderful girl. I think she was reading scripture in the bathroom, and Matt said, come in. I'd like to read scripture with you in the dressing room. Yeah. And Matt lifts up her skirt and proceeds to do what he does. And Elton walks in the dressing room maybe 15 seconds after this act takes place.
Yeah.
And Elton walks in and says, what the hell is going on here? And Matt pulls out, puts her skirt down, and says, you dirty whore, get the hell out of here right now. Get out. And opens the door and pushes her into the restroom. And Elton's looking at Matt, and we're all looking at Matt. I don't remember who else was in the dressing room, maybe me and Brett and somebody else. But he says, I'm sorry, Elton, try to tell that dirty whore not to come in here. He goes, good job, Matt, good job. And walked out.
Yeah.
And we looked and laughed.
That sounds about right.
But you can't tell somebody that without them understanding and knowing Elton, that he might have had a few nips of cough syrup or whatever it may be.
But he was the biggest mark in the business, too. Plus the cough syrup, he was a total mark, but he loved Dutch. He loved your boy Dutch.
Mm.
Yeah, he did do that.
So Doc, you're in Knoxville or Chattanooga? Well, you're in Knoxville, right?
No, I am in Knoxville. Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Good.
Are you running any shows?
No, I'm not running any shows. The strange thing about Knoxville and this East Tennessee is it's so disheartening. I tried to run a school 3 years ago when I first came back and had 20 guys left and ended up with 4 because everybody knows everything around here. And if they don't, literally, there's a show running every night around Knoxville in this area, Pigeon Forge, Sevierville, Seymour, all these little outside towns, within a 60-mile radius. And you don't have to learn how to wrestle, though. Just say, hey, boys, come on up here, put up the ring. We'll teach you something, and you can get on the card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have no desire to run the shows. It's just it's a losing, to me, from what I've seen, it's a losing battle. It's horrible around it.
Since I moved to Savannah,
that's the trouble.
Go ahead, Mickey.
No, you go ahead, Jerry. You go ahead. I'll chime in when you're done.
I'm going to relate to what Tom's talking about. Since I moved to Savannah, I've had guys at the gym come up to me, man, I want you to teach me to wrestle, blah, blah, blah. Could you do that? I said, I can, but I'm not. Why not? I said, if I teach you to wrestle, if you can do it and, you might have some potential, I said, I can get you no matches nowhere.
Right.
And you wouldn't make anything. I said, I'm not going to take your money.
Trouble.
I mean, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to
do
it.
You're an honest man. That's what I was going to say. That's the trouble. Anybody can be a pro wrestler. That's the trouble with that, Anybody.
They think they can.
You don't have to pay a price. You don't have to pay your dues and look like a wrestler and have a physique and just anybody. That's so bad about all them promotions.
Well, and that's the good and bad thing about having a commission. I know Oregon now has a commission, I believe, which is good to a point. The best commission I ever saw, in my opinion, was the California Commission, Boxing and Wrestling Commission they had in the 80s when I was in L.A., because they actually did take care of your medical bills if you got hurt. But the other commissions, I think, just collect money and don't do anything else. So now with the commission being done away with, anybody in the South pretty much, because I don't think there's a commission in Georgia or Tennessee, and you can just go out and do whatever you want to do, and anybody can get a ring and promote a show. And it's horrible out there. It really, really is. And the only way I'll work a show is if somebody calls me and asks me to work or emails me. That's one reason I got Facebook. email me and ask me what it costs. Well, I'll name a price. I would think they would say no, and then they say yes. Well, then I'll go. But I'm not going to do anything to get hurt these days. I'm not going to go out and just work with anybody and not be protected. And it's crazy out there, man. It really is.
Well, you're taking your life in your own hands.
It's what?
I mean, you are. I know I was promoted there in my hometown. I built this beautiful arena there. It was unbelievable. I mean, had the ring lights. I had everything. You can ask anybody that went there. It was Bob Armstrong came to that building. He said, I'd give anything to have this building. It took me 2 years to build it. It was beautiful. Unbelievable. So, I had some pretty good hands. I had David Young. I had Eric Watts. Getting talent.
Yeah.
You know, they all thought they were superstars. I paid Eric Watts $300 a night. paid David Young $150 a night. I had AJ Styles. I had him twice. Paid him $500. But
you're a good payoff, man.
I was.
Yeah.
And so I asked Ted Allen. I said, Ted, you see any talent? I said, oh yeah. I said, give me a couple of names next time you come. Okay. All right, I got this guy and that guy. I said, what do they look like? They look like wrestlers. I'm not hunting guys with tennis shoes and cut off blue jeans, none of that.
Right.
I'm hunting wrestling gear because that's Columbus, Georgia was a wrestling town. Even though New York was running, I said, I'm old school and I'm a wrestler. I was a wrestler, and that's what we're going to do. So,
So
he sent the kid in. Hey, look, all right. Now I called him in there. I said, look, you're on the second match. I said, let me ask you something. I said, how long have you been wrestling? He said, 6 years. I said, 6 years. I said, how many matches you had? He said, 25.
Right.
You see what
I'm
saying? You see, yeah. Oh, geez. I'm sorry. You're on the first match, and then I had one guy. He looked pretty good. He'd go up there and go Broadway. He said, okay. He got the referee, so what's he talking about? He didn't know what I was talking about. No, I'm telling you. I mean, you know that, Tom. You're out there. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I sure do. And it's really disheartening. It's discouraging, too. But then you will see a
heart.
Guy. Yeah. It really is, man. I don't even like sitting in the dressing room listening to the stories or listening to them talk. I know times change. I get it. But at the same time, there's some things that don't change, and that's respect and learning the business. So all too often, these guys don't have a clue how to even lock up. You don't know how to tell a story. Don't know how to listen. They just want to go out and get their stuff in, and that's what they do. They go out and do the flip and flies, have a Corona, some toupees and all that stuff, and it means absolutely nothing.
And we did it because we loved it. Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I'm sure y'all do.
I did too. Yeah,
I loved every minute of it. I was blessed. I went back home. I had a gym for 25 years. I was still going to Japan. I was still wrestling here in Georgia. I was going different places. I was blessed. And when all this went down, I was working for Ole when the thing ended up there. Me and Garvin and. I think, I don't know who all was still there. I mean, still had a pretty good crew. And one Saturday was at TBS and George Scott walked in. I said, it's over.
Hmm. Yeah.
I said, guys, we want all of you guys back next Saturday. No, nobody showed up because we knew it was over. So, and to see it the way it was turned out and treated and guys our age, I always thought that I'd have wound up promoting some towns here in Georgia, being from Georgia, or doing something.
Right.
Even though I had my business, there was at one time there was more talent sitting at home, good talent, than he had up there.
Right.
Sitting at home.
Right.
He put everybody in the wrestling business out of business. I know he made a lot of guys a lot of money. I understand that. I'm not begrudging that. I don't begrudge them making that money. But I know for what we did, I've wound up with two knee replacements. I've had a total of seven knee surgeries, elbow surgeries,
But that's what I chose to do, and I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying, for how we were all treated at the end, it was like, we don't need you. Going down the road, you know, everybody's got a story to tell, you know. But
well, and I agree with you, and there's not only that change, but, you know, once again, I said I was reading the Grappler's book, and he talks about an incident in Louisiana where Killer Carl Cox would walk in the dressing room, which would be the newsroom of the TV studio that everybody dressed at, you know, with his gun and pointing greenhorns and just having fun. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, and I then, love Carl.
Of course. Well, this is about you and Ted. He said Watts called Lenny in the bathroom where they go over the finishes, and Cox had been kind of messing with Lenny for the time he was there, and Killer Carl looked at Lenny and says, "Those boys out there think I'm crazy, don't they?" And Lenny said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, here's what we're going to do." So they pulled the rib. He said, "I already cued the Oates boys in on this, and, you know, you guys, when Cox came out of the bathroom, you know, he started saying something to Lenny, and then he kicked Lenny in the ass, and he went down, and Lenny got right in his face. He said, "Don't you ever do that again, you MF," and then you and Ted came grabbing him and pulled him away. You know, things like that where you could work the boys in the dressing room, have fun, you know, the green guys, and get that experience of what it's like to not know if it's real or not know if it's genuine or not, because it's all real, but is it genuine? I think that's a huge element missing today. You know, you and Ted came over and pulled Lenny away. You guys were in on the rib because the boys thought he was going to fight Cox right there and going to get his ass handed to him. But
I know we've gotten off of Oregon, but we'll get back there. But one story about Carl Cox, I loved him to death. Had great matches with him. I loved him. I trusted him. I'd trust him with anything. There was this, Watts brought this black kid in from Houston. He called himself Professor Shannon Powell. So Cox said, "I'm going to help follow him." So Cox, he comes in throwing chairs all over the dressing room. It was in Tulsa, throwing chairs all over, raising his hand, kicking chairs over, blah, 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 blah. That kid's eyes, I mean, they looked like softball. They were so big. Because he had seen Carl wrestle in Houston. He was scared to death of him. I said, "Don't get that, man. Don't fool with him." I said, "He's in bad mood tonight." I said, "No, he's not right." I know that. I've seen him wrestle, but he ain't right. I said, "Just stay away from him." So Carl, he'd settle down. All of a sudden, he'd jump up. You know how Carl was, those mannerisms he had. He, you know. So he kind of settled down. So he's going through his bag, and he pulls his wallet out. He's sitting there looking at his wallet. So he calls that kid over there. He said, "Come here a minute." "Yes, sir." I said, "Go see what he wants. Go see what he wants. He's all right." So he said, "Did I ever show you a picture of my son?" He said, "No, sir." And Carl had a picture of his dog in his wallet.
Yeah.
He showed that kid that picture. That kid started laughing. Carl told him that was his son. That kid started laughing. Carl jumped up, went through the whole scene again, turning stuff over. Well, that kid actually wrote like 3 or 4 of me that night. He was supposed to be in Tulsa the next night. You know, he got on the bus in the middle of the night, went back to Houston, and we never seen him since.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Can I tell my Carl Cox story? All right, I'll make this quick. I was working with him in Cincinnati. He was getting a real nice push from the Sheik. He probably wasn't getting no money, but anyway, we're having this match, and he's going to beat me with the Brain Buster. So we're in the ring, and I do this move where I stand on the hand, and I do an ass bump on the leg or the arm. So I do it, but just as I'm coming down, the ring separated a little bit, and his arm got, like, in and out of this little separation, and I broke his arm. So he goes, "Kid, my arm's broke." And I said, "Well, I'll miss something real quick, and can you do the finish?" He goes, "Yeah, no problem. The fucking arm's broke. I mean, it's at an angle." And the left arm was broken. That's the one he hooked me with and then, you know, held me up with his right arm. But I don't know, I missed something. He puts the finish on me, and it was him and I and Al Costello. We had come from Detroit to Cincy, and we took him to the hospital. We put the cast on it, and the guy was working 2 days later. I mean, he had some big balls. Carl Cox had some big balls. And he was so loose in the ring, too. I mean, I I mean, I never felt nothing in the ring with him. It was great to work with the guy, you know. I like the guy, too. Yep, good guy. That's my story.
Very nice. Very nice story. Yes. Do we have any more Portland stories?
I've got some, but I'm not sure I can tell. I mean, I don't know if the statute of limitations
tell
is
him,
still
on. Tell him.
No, I don't know. Like the time CVF, you know. I think Seattle was a Wednesday night, and there was another, I believe there was another girl or woman, whichever we want to put a category in.
Yeah.
We Jimmy got to know her that night, and we all got to know her that night. But he put her in the car, and she rode back with us to the Bomber, and again, read scriptures all the way there. And the next night, she got up, and there was a bus stop outside the Bomber. She'd gone on the bus on her own and gone on the way back to Seattle. I mean, it was, God, that place was known for stuff like that, you know? It really was.
Do you, know, do you remember?
Being, but,
do you remember that girl, Soupy? Do you guys remember her, Soupy?
You know, now you're talking about just generalities, Mickey. I'm sure that, you know. No, I don't. I don't
remember. That was her name. Well, she had a baby with Andre. She had Andre's daughter, Soupy. She would make clothes for us, you know, ring jacket if you wanted. And she was a nice gal. I mean, she liked to party, but she was a nice gal. Soupy, yeah. But like I said, she got pregnant from Andre. That must have been a story in itself.
No,
hey guys, I got cut off, but I don't know if y'all talked about Jimmy or not, but this don't look good for him, does it?
No, not yet. Go ahead, Jerry.
I said this doesn't look good for him.
No,
who is this?
It doesn't.
Snooker?
Jimmy Snooker, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good. That's a shame. I mean, you know, someone died, and that's a terrible thing, too, but, I mean, Jesus, Jimmy's not in good shape anyway now. He looks bad. I've seen him on pictures. He don't look too good.
Tom, was
yeah,
he out there
happen,
when you
right?
were there?
I'm sorry?
Was he out there when you were there?
No, he was not. I met Jimmy in Houston, though, when I was 16, and I was working in the office, the wrestling office. But I did not know him in Oregon. But I do remember the first time he came into Houston, they put him over, I think it was El Gran Goliath, for the Texas Championship. And here's another story. You know, Jimmy couldn't read and write. And Paul Bosch wanted to help him. Well, I didn't realize that Don did the same thing for him in Oregon because Paul had got all these, I don't know how many books, maybe three or four books on how to read and write. And I was supposed to show Jimmy Snuka how to read and write in the wrestling office when he would come into town before the show. But Jimmy wasn't really interested, and I didn't really, how was it going to be the guy at 16 years old saying, no, Jimmy, we have to do this. No, we're going to do this. But I did what I could, and I've known Jimmy for a long time. It's a shame that he's in the shape he's in.
The guy had a great heart. He had a good heart. He just,
Jimmy,
you know, when he went
guy.
In New York, he just,
yeah.
He got caught up in all the cocaine and all the bullshit and, you know, all the glimmer and all that there. He just got caught up in it, I think, truthfully, and just, that was it.
You know, Don Owens loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked the part. He was the part. He came over, and everything he did in the ring was effortless. And how many guys in that era could actually go to the top rope and fly the way he did? I mean, literally do that splash.
Yeah.
He was the first guy I ever saw do anything like that. Moskris did his stuff. He would do a cross body.
I mean, the Luchadors did it, but
yeah.
But Jimmy, and the physique he had at the time, I mean, it's a great physique,
oh,
even for now, today's look. It's still a great look.
The first night I was in Seattle, he was in a cage match, and I saw him go up on top of this, I don't know how tall that cage was. He come off the top rope. I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen nothing like that in my life.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah, he was fearless. Yeah. Yeah, I hope things work out for him. I don't know what's going to happen, though. But we'll see. You think that'll affect his daughter on TV? You think they'll pull her from TV because of this?
I don't think so. I mean, I would hope not. I would hope they do the right thing and not let anything affect her career, her life. I mean, she didn't have any control over what her dad did, right, wrong, or indifferent. I don't think it should. I hope it wouldn't, and I don't think it should.
Right. Yeah, I hope so, too.
Yeah, and once again, why do you think, besides the fact that it's just a beautiful place to live, why do you think so many guys did homestead in Portland?
I think short trips. I mean, you could probably get a job and still make the shots for the most part if you wanted to do that. I mean, you know what I mean?
And half the time you had to, right? Yeah. No, not really. I mean, you made pretty good money there. I did. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And I'm sure there's still a few people that do live up there. I mean, what about Rip Oliver? Is Rip still up there?
I heard he worked in one of the paper mills up there, but that was a long time ago. I heard that. I don't know.
Is Denton still out there?
He was a truck. Who did you say, Jerry?
Lynn Denton.
No,
yes,
Lynn
is
still up there. Yeah. Yeah, and I talked to Lynn a couple months ago. Yeah.
Was Piper still
living
up there?
That's your brother-in-law, right? Yeah.
What's that?
He said that was your brother-in-law.
No. Tony Anthony. Tony's here in Tennessee. He was my brother-in-law, but he divorced his wife. I'm still married to his ex-wife's sister. No, so Lynn.
You ever talk to him?
Yeah, I do.
Tell him I said hello.
I certainly will. Yeah, he's living in Knoxville, just enjoying life and having a good time.
Was Piper still living in Portland?
I believe Piper had just moved to Los Angeles, from what I heard. He moved to Los Angeles to get more movie roles, and he had done a movie, earlier this year. They were going to release it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know he had made one. But didn't he have a business up there?
In Oregon, he had the pit stop. He had like I think it was an oil change.
Or something?
Yeah, maybe something like that, yeah. When he was running for him. Sure was. I don't know
I was just going to say, I thought he hurt some of the boys he gave jobs to in his auto place. Maybe
he gave money. Lynn Denton a job there. Lynn was running it for a while. I don't know if he still have it, but Lynn was running it for a long time.
And Lynn is still there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was from Texas, wasn't he?
Yes, from Houston, Texas. He's right out of Humble, Texas, actually, right out of on the north side of Houston.
Hey, did you guys know Ricky Ronaldo? Do you guys remember Ricky Ronaldo?
I don't.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar, but I can't place him. No, where's Ricky from?
I just want. Midwest. He came through Oregon in 73 when I was there. He came through there, and I just wonder whatever happened to him. You know, just a guy I thought of real quick here when we're throwing out names. I just wonder what happened to him. That's all.
I'll throw out a name that was there during the time. What about Buck Ramstead?
He was down from Vancouver. I remember him. I didn't know him, but I remember he would work for who was running Al Tomko, I think, was running Vancouver back in that era. Or Connecticut, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, he came to Oregon when I was there, and he was an interesting guy. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Tom, you was in Portland, and you said 85?
85, yes.
Was Dale, did Dale Lewis ever come around?
No. I saw Dale Lewis when I was a kid in Texas, but no, I never saw him in Portland.
He was living there when I was there in 78. So, 78.
He wasn't working, though. Jerry, he wasn't working then, was he? Because I remember.
No.
I don't remember him working. Gentlemen,
I got an email, and a listener is wondering if any of you have stories of Abdullah the Butcher, who started out as Abdullah the Butcher in the Pacific Northwest.
Well,
you're out there now. He started out as Larry Shreve in Detroit in probably 59. That's where he started out. Is that what the guy's saying? He was Shreve out of Windsor.
As Abdul the Butcher, I believe he started the gimmick as the Butcher in Seattle. That's what they're saying.
Gee, I don't know. I have no idea. Huh.
I never did know he was out there.
Me either. I knew Butcher in Texas, again, when I was taking him to the airport.
That was probably in the 60s, though, I bet. I bet that was like in the 60s when he did that or something way back.
How about, let me ask you guys this. What about Beauregard? You guys talking about Beauregard?
Ripper. That was Ripper's boy, Beauregard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Ripper Collins, I mean, Ripper, he managed Ripper. He was a pretty flamboyant guy, and he worked, and he had a good physique. I didn't know him, but Ripper, because I used to, Ripper and I teamed up when I first went in there, which was that's a lot of stories there, but he would always talk about Beauregard being real flamboyant and a bodybuilder, and, you know, but he would, that's all I know, just what Ripper told me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Did he ever work anywhere else? Was that just in Portland? I mean, he had a rock and roll band.
Yeah,
he had some records.
Yeah, Shires liked him. I know Shires liked because he liked bodies and blondes. He was a blonde, so, you know, he fit there. I don't know if he made any money, but I know he worked for Shires. I think he did the whole thing we did. We worked L.A., Frisco, Portland, you know, that whole Pacific Ocean circuit, you know.
Hmm. Well,
but that's all I know.
And I'm sure you guys talked about Lonnie Mae and Tony Bourne. We mentioned Tony a little while ago, but Lonnie Mae always, again, he was a guy I watched in Texas, and then once I got in the business, he already died. When did he get in the car wreck? 77 or 78, something 78. Like that.
He left.
No, 78.
He left Georgia and went to Florida. He was here in Georgia and went to Florida and got killed. Isn't that right?
Oh.
Jerry, he got killed coming home from San Bernardino.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I do remember that.
His last match was with Piper, and he was going 120. And remember, he always had a Corvette of some kind, and it was probably Interstate 5, and boom, you know, I heard he just lost control or something, and bad story, sad story. I like Lonnie. He would always try to help me and, you know, do this kid, do that. I always liked him. He was a good guy.
Yeah. I mean, again, he's one of those guys I watched growing up in Texas, and then once I got to know more about the business, and I saw how a guy like that could be so crazy and insane in the ring. He was just as crazy and insane out of the ring, but he could be a really good guy. So.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, exactly.
A crazy bump man, you know. He would take any bump. He didn't care. He was fearless, just crazy bumps.
Yeah.
Which was fun to watch him. Yeah,
yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. A nice man. Sad story. I remember we were doing the 10-bell salute in Oregon when we got the word of that. For a week, we did 10 bells every town we were in. Yeah.
Well,
a lot of guys die on the road.
Yeah. Have you guys brought up Billy Jack's name, or is that like Beetlejuice? You don't want to say it three times and have him appear. I don't know.
I never knew the guy.
I just remember when he went to New York and they had did the vignettes on him, and then he came back to Oregon, and I'll never forget because I'd only been in Portland a couple months, maybe. I had been a couple months, and Billy came in the dressing room, and Tom went and says, "Oh, here's a big New York star. You had to come back." So how was it? And I think Billy said he didn't care for it too much. But I just remember being around Billy back then. He wasn't like he is now. Let's just say that. But he was a big name.
How is he now?
Huh?
How is he now? What's his life now? Is he not doing well in life?
I don't know. I don't want to step out here on a limb and say that I think he might be living in the world of delusion. But you know what I mean? He does these videos once in a while that makes you kind of scratch your head and say, wait just a minute. If you want somebody to take you seriously, you can't be talking this way. So... So he loses a lot of credibility.
But they gave him a huge push in New York. I mean, he was one of their top baby faces. I remember when that whole thing popped, right?
Well, yeah,
Yeah,
but you get up there and you're not being treated the same way you were when you were back in that small pond. And he was just another guy out there. And I think as anybody on this phone call can attest to, it's not always what you do in the ring. In fact, it's not really what you do in the ring that counts. It's how you do backstage that really counts, and now so more than ever.
You're talking about now we're getting on a whole Pat Patterson thing here, right? That's where we're going on that direction.
Well, no, I don't
correct?
Believe I even. Now hold on here. No. I'm talking about the psychological psychic war games backstage, and it ain't always.
Oh,
you know,
I thought you were talking
about. No, I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. I'm talking about just playing
not
the game,
Pat.
Man.
You're not talking about Portland Pat. Right.
No, that was Portland Pam we're talking about, not the Portland Pat.
Oh, okay.
But right. No. I mean, I think Billy just was one of those guys who looked the part, was great, went to Florida for a while, and probably had high hopes for him. But once again, it's something that everybody finds out one way or another and catches on with it one way or another, and that's learning how to play the game. I'll never forget asking Bill Dundee, actually, Pat Rose was my partner in Memphis, and Pat asked Bill Dundee.
I remember Pat Rose, yeah.
Yeah, Pat asked Dundee, what do you have to do to get a break? And then he said, the first thing is somebody has to like you, and the booker has to like you. And Don Owens liked Billy Jack, and Don Owens always pushed Billy Jack, and Billy was a Portland guy, but once he went to the East Coast, I think he found out that it takes more than just being a Portland guy, and you have to, man, what a lot of energy you have to expend backstage just to be in that mix, and that's what it was. So anyway, I just wondered if you guys brought up Billy.
There was also some Pat Patterson influence too, if you know there was. I mean, there were some guys that, sell your soul type thing, right? But
Sure. It's like Dennis Condrey, my good friend Dennis Condrey, which said, well, did you actually see it? I said, no. So you really don't know. You can always speculate, but until you see it. That's why a lot of those stories that are heard of, man, with people putting Elton cigar up their ass, I said, oh, yeah, right. And then I actually saw it and went, oh, okay. So this really happens, and then you'd see Matt with somebody, and Elton would see it. Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? I mean, I saw the same thing. So it's just, I think it's a matter of who to believe, what to believe, and man.
Yeah, you're right. Just see it. Seeing's believing, right?
Yeah. Well, unless you're Elton.
Unless you're Elton. Yeah.
That's
right.
True.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we have just a few minutes left, so I want to give all of you some time. If there's anything you'd like to say in closing, if you guys want to plug anything that you might want to plug or promote, we'll start with Mickey Doyle.
What the heck? I work with this little group in the Upper Peninsula in Gladstone, Michigan, and I kind of help them run shows, and sometimes I even jump in the ring if I think I'm not going to get killed, and it's called Upper Peninsula Wrestling in Upper Michigan. So, yeah. And let me just say thanks for having me on your show. And great catching up with some old friends, some guys I traveled with, and just great talking to Jerry and Tom. And God bless you guys.
All right, Mr. Jerry Oates, anything?
Yeah, I'm like Mickey. I appreciate you having me on, and it's good to hear Tom's voice. I hadn't seen Tom in many, many years like Mickey, and it's it's just good to rehash stuff that we did, and I think 99% of it was the truth, and we just love what we did, and I just appreciate you having us on. I really do.
Mr. Pritchard?
Well, I will say this. October 20th will be my 36th anniversary of being in professional wrestling. And when I first started, I went to Louisiana with Boyd Pierce and made some shots. And And Jerry Oates was one of the guys who was there 36 years ago, and I'll never forget, I walked into a hotel, I'm not sure which one it was, maybe the Shady Tree or Shady Elm, whatever it was called, something like that, and Baton Rouge or Shreveport, the years kind of make it foggy, but I'll never forget Jerry saying, "Hey, jabroni." I didn't know what that meant, but that's something I always remember from Jerry Oates.
Did I say that to you? I'm sorry.
You did say that to me, and I'd only been wrestling about a month, and I did not think I deserved jabroni yet. Yeah, hey, jabroni. or no, crowbar. Crowbar. I take that back. You did not say it. Crowbar. Hey, crowbar. That's what it was. No, you didn't say jabroni.
With you, Tom. I must have worked with you.
No, you didn't yet. You just said, it was a crowbar. You hadn't yet. You just probably heard it. Yeah, that was, once again, that was 36 years ago, somewhere in either the Louisiana Shreveport or Baton Rouge Hotel. What was the name of the hotel everybody stayed at? That's what I'm trying to, Shady Rest or Shady, the Tree, something.
Shady Rest.
Yeah, something
Shady
like
Rest,
that.
With Uncle Joe.
Yeah, but it was one of those hotels, all, motels or whatever it was, all the boys stayed in. And then, of course, I got to say this too, Mickey Doyle. When I first went to Los Angeles, we went to go see the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Also, we worked out in the park. We did chin-ups in the park and worked out.
Reseda Park in Reseda, California.
Yes.
Yep, that's
yes.
Cool.
But it was one of those things, man. I remember the guys who were good to me. I remember the guys who weren't so good to me, man. So I try to be one of the guys who's good to the younger guys coming up, because I know what it's like to have somebody who has more experience than you trying to be better than you and trying to tell you you don't have a chance. So there's two guys who actually treated a crowbar, and I said jabroni, I meant crowbar.
Jabroni.
Crowbar and jabroni, thank you. At least know why I got in business and why it was so much fun. So, and Oregon was one of those territories, real quick, one of those territories I still wish was around, because that's the place the young guys could have gone to learn and listen and be mentored by. So, yeah, it's very cool. Thanks for having me on as well. And I hope I'm good again sometime.
Hey, this is Mickey. Maybe we can meet up at the Gulf Coast reunion some year, guys. You know, Jerry and Tom. That'd be cool, eh?
Yeah, it'd be very cool. Just got to make it happen.
So, I mean, I'll talk to you guys on Facebook. You know, well, maybe
yeah,
we can,
great.
That'd be great.
Yeah, look, yeah, send me a message. Send me your phone number.
All right. I will. I'll do that tonight. Well, we should be in more contact, guys. We should be in more contact. It's fun reminiscing. Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank all of you very, very much. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, and we would love to have all of you back sometime in the future. Fans, get out there, support your local independent wrestling tonight. North Portland Eagles. NWA Blue Collar running in Portland. Get out there, support them, and we will talk to you next week.